themes that we're talking about this week. Just hit the nail right on the head with that. If you would like to open up your Bibles to Mark chapter 1, that's going to be the place that we read from first. Before we do, I have to apologize to the group, those of you who were here on Sunday. There's a crocodile. I forgot about the crocodile. Can we just move on? I'm sorry. I didn't remember the crocodile, and it has upset some of you. If you don't know what I'm talking about, then you'll just have to listen to the Sunday morning lesson and insert that there's a crocodile at the Battle of Kruger. You know, you're teasing around, but you are not the first person. You came up and you said something like, "There's this thing," and I'm like, "You're the third one to yell at me about the crocodile." No. It's been a great week. I've really enjoyed getting to know you all, truly. This has been so good for me, and I really only have one regret, and often this time of the year, my kids are doing the virtual learning right now through our school system at home, and so it didn't occur to me that since their school is on their laptops, that they could have come with me, but the only regret that I have is that you can't meet my wife and my kids, and that they can't meet you all. This is a great congregation. I'm so grateful to be here. I understand that you all are, I guess, coming close to the end of a series of lessons on Wednesday nights that you normally do. And if I understand correctly, the series of different people who have come in has been what pleases the Lord. Is that right? The general theme, what pleases the Lord. And so my subject tonight just fit perfectly. I was excited whenever you said, "Hey, we're doing the summer series and you do a lesson." I kind of thought, "Oh, I got something that I'm already thinking about that I would like to talk about." And you said, "Children, obey your parents." And I'm like, "Perfect. Family, it's perfect. It's perfect." It may seem, I want to say this at the start, just so you know, it may seem for the first huge chunk, maybe even the bulk of this lesson, that I have forgotten about your series. And that I'm not talking about your series and I'm just doing my own thing. I'm not. It's so easy. I mean, we could just read the passages. I think the key text for tonight is Colossians chapter 3 and verse 20. "Children, obey your parents and the Lord. This is what pleases the Lord." It's easy to do that. Not to make it happen or to obey your parents, but to say it, to read the text and all of the things like that. And in the passage about obey your parents because you're supposed to. And so often what happens in my house is somebody says, "Why?" And the reason is because I said so. And tonight what I would like to do for some of you young folks, especially, you know, you are the listeners in this series of the lesson tonight, "Children, Obey Your Parents." What I would like to offer you is not obey your parents because I said so, but I'd like to offer you a why. Why do we do that? Why does God say, "Children, obey your parents"? And still, this falls within the big scope of what we're doing this week whenever we're talking about what was family. What did family look like and what did family mean in the ancient world when God said, "Children"? What did it mean to be a child? "Obey your parents." What did it mean to be a parent? We're going to talk about some of that. And we'll break it down into three sections tonight. But let me start with this. How do you answer the question? You don't have to say it out loud. In fact, I prefer that you don't. If you really want to, you can. But answer it in your head, actually. Don't just hear the question. Answer the question in your head right now. Tell me this about you. If I come up and I say, "Hey, hello, my name is Ryan. Who are you?" And you say, "This is my name." And I say, "Okay, but tell me who you are. Who are you?" I'm asking about your identity. Tell me about yourself. I want to know you. How are you going to do that? How are you going to communicate that with me? And tell me who you are. I think that so many of us, and I'm not even critical of this, If you said, Ryan, who are you? I would say, I'm married to Becky. That's the very top of my list. And I would tell you about my wife, and I would tell you about my three kids, and I would say I'm a preacher, because that's what I do. My days are consumed with that. You probably need to know that about me. If you wanted to know something about me, I would tell you about what I do. Some of you would say, this is where I live. And so, you know, I'm having these conversations, and we're getting to know each other, and it just comes up. And this happens all over the country. But even more so here, I mean, 3 hours away from St. Louis. I'm from St. Louis. Oh, a Cardinals fan? Absolutely not. I'm going to give you one opportunity, and we can still be friends, but that better never happen again. Who are you? I've got to say, I'm from Kansas City. I'm from Kansas City. And do you see what I've done? I told you where I came from. This is where I was born. This is where I'm from. And so this is my family. This is what I do for a living. This is where I'm from. I'm from Kansas City. How would you answer the question? Tell me about yourself. Who are you? What are the things that come into your mind as you think about this? I want to read something to you, and then we'll get into some of these texts. The world... This is a quote. I've read several of these quotes throughout the week. If anywhere along the line you say, hey, I would like to have reference material, I've got all of that. I'm happy to. I'm not fully citing each one of my sources, but I'm happy to share that if you would like to know in any of this. But this is one from Joseph Hellerman. The world in which Jesus and his followers lived was distinctly strong group culture, in which the health of the group, not the needs of the individual, received first priority. The health and the well-being of the group is what matters more than anything else. Not me or what I think or what I feel or what I want or what I expect out of life. The group, because it is the group that is survival. And so you see this in some different ways in the Bible. Look, and you will know these. I'm not going to tell you anything you don't know. But look at this. Mark chapter 1 and verses 19 and 20. This is Jesus calling his first disciples. Mark chapter 1, starting in verse 19, going on a little farther, Jesus is who is being described here with the he saw James, the son of Zebedee, and John, his brother, who were in their boat mending the nets, and immediately he called them, and they left their father Zebedee in the boat with the hired servants and followed him. This is a picture of the ancient world right here, and it is something that we would call a family business, but like actually what a picture of a family business is. You'll notice that Zebedee, the father, was in the boat, and two of the brothers were in the boat working alongside their dad, mending the nets. And it would not be a wild stretch to just make some assumptions that Zebedee's father also was a fisherman, and that James and John, if they had sons or eventually had sons, that they were going to be fishermen. And once they caught their fish and they mended their nets, they would have brought it in, and the kids and the women would have cleaned the fish and taken them to the market. Because the family all worked together, from grandparents to parents to children. Everybody was together in this strong group network, in this strong group culture. Look at this other one in Mark chapter 6 and verse 3. You may want to mark this one just so you can flip back and forth and see this. I always think it's interesting what kinds of under the water, behind the scenes messages you can see when you compare the parallels in the Gospels. Most of us don't even pay attention to this stuff. But look at Mark chapter 6 and verse 3. Here are some people in Jesus' hometown rejecting him, and listen why. They say, "Is not this the carpenter, the son of Mary and brother of James?" And they list his family. So in Mark's telling of the criticism that the people in Nazareth has of Jesus, they say, wait a second, Jesus, everybody saying he's special, is not this the carpenter? Did you read it? Did you see it in there? Is not this the carpenter? But leave your finger there and turn over to Matthew chapter 13. Listen to the way that Matthew says this. In Matthew chapter 13 and verse 55, it's the exact same story, only Matthew's telling it instead of Mark. And the way that Matthew says it, he says, "Is not this the carpenter's son? Is not his mother called Mary and his brother James?" And the exact same thing, only Mark says, "Is not this the carpenter?" And Matthew says, "Is not this the carpenter's son?" And it's not like this is a huge problem, you know. There's some sort of discrepancy in the gospel. It's the exact same thing. Of course Jesus did what his father did. If Jesus's earthly father, adoptive father, was a carpenter, then of course Jesus himself was a carpenter. There's no discrepancy. It is the exact same thing given the circumstances in the ancient world. And so if we start saying questions like, "Who are you?" You can't describe who you are in the ancient world without talking about your family. If I'm going to say, "This is who I am, this is what you need to know about me in order to know who I am," I've got to tell you something about my group that I'm from and who I live with and who I'm associated. You have to know it. You can't know me apart from my family in the ancient world. And you already know some of this stuff. This is why the boring parts of the Bible exist. You know, when you're doing your daily Bible reading and you're flipping through and you start to come to this, "Was the son of so-and-so, was the son of so-and-so, was the son..." And I'm doing a Bible reading and I get through about five verses of that and then I'm just like, next paragraph, all right. And then you get to 1 Chronicles 1 through 10. 10 chapters of it. And we look at the Bible and we're like, "Oh, it's genealogy and was the son of so-and-so," and all of this business about tribes and families. It's because this is the number one key identifying factor for identity in the ancient world. Who are you? You can't know who I am without me telling you about my family. That's number one. All right? I told you there's three things that we're going to do tonight. Number one, what do you have to know about me to know who I am and what I'm like? You have to know about my family. You can't know me without my family. Number one. All right, next, number two. If you're going to know about my family, you have to know about my father. This is David da Silva. The father's reputation becomes the starting place for the reputation of the children. If they come from a good, reliable father, it will be taken as a given that they will be good and reliable unless they prove otherwise. Conversely, a father in disgrace is a hard legacy to overcome. And so turn to Matthew chapter 16. This one is always interesting to me. Whenever you start to see what's going on with some of these things rather than just reading the words almost mindlessly on the page, there is a prefix that's Aramaic. Aramaic was the language that people spoke where Jesus lived. It was their native language. And so there's a prefix that goes before names, bar. And the word bar means son of, right? So I am Bar Rodney. I am the son of Rodney. That's how you would use the bar prefix. And so you can see a couple of these. And I won't do all of them. If you just get into like a... I don't know, like an internet search. You don't need Bible software to do this. Just search the Bible for B-A-R. You're going to see that there's tons of these throughout the New Testament. All right, so Matthew chapter 16 and verse 17, Peter says, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." Jesus says back to him, "Blessed are you, Simon bar Jonah." Simon, son of Jonah. John's gospel says, you are the son of John. But Bar, it's not Simon Bar-Jonah. Most of us probably can quote this verse. Blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah, for you have recognized this great thing. Jesus is just saying who his dad is. You are Simon, the son of your father, because it matters. Here's one that really surprises me. Every once in a while, even knowing these things, it still surprises me when I stop to think about it. Look at Mark chapter 10 and verse 46. And as we're turning over to Mark chapter 10, before you look down at the verse, what is the name of the blind beggar along the side of the road? What's his name? Somebody say it. Bartimaeus is his name, right? You're like, well, now that we're thinking about Bar. I mean, really, that's in my neighborhood, when I go out, nobody in my neighborhood knows who I am. When I go out and walk the dog, everyone says, hi, Luke's dad. I have no identity apart from my son. I am his father. This is just the opposite. This is the other way around. Look at this. Listen to the way that you read it here. Verse 46, Mark 10, 46. They came to Jericho, and as he was leaving Jericho with his disciples and a crowd and a great crowd, Bartimaeus, in my Bible, there's no dash or space, Bar. Bartimaeus. It's like his name. What's his name? Bartimaeus is his name. It says, Bartimaeus, a blind beggar, but look here. The son of Timaeus, Bartimaeus, was sitting by the side of the road. And so he starts to cry out to Jesus, have mercy on me, and all of this. Do you realize? I mean, we say, what's this guy's name? And we say, Bartimaeus. We don't know what his name is. The only thing that we know about him is that he was blind, and we know who his father is. His entire identity. Can you imagine? Would it be offensive to you? Would it offend you? If your identity was wholly, entirely wrapped up in who your dad is. You had no being or existence or identity of your own. You are son of Rodney. And that's it. Nobody even knows your name. That's who this guy is. You got to know about his father. Do you remember the story with Elizabeth and Zechariah? Whenever John the Baptist was born, they say, what's his name? And they say, his name's going to be John. And everybody loses their mind. Well, that's not, his dad's name is Zechariah. And Zechariah's like, no, John, because the angel said. But nobody can, and it says in Luke's gospel, it says, and they all wondered, he's not going to be named after his dad? This is outlandish in this society, in this way of thinking. Now I got something that I want to say about that, but this seems like a really good time to point out some other things about this and thinking about how your identity is wrapped up in your father. Look at Mark chapter 6. Since we're in Mark's gospel still, just turn back a couple pages to Mark chapter 6. We read this just a second ago, Mark chapter 6 and verse 3, when everybody was saying, is this not the carpenter? Listen to what they said. And understand that the people who are saying these things about Jesus are not being nice when they say this. They say, is not this the carpenter, the son of Mary and the brother of James? What did they just do? We would say, in our world today, we would say those are fighting words. Like, they just did something that is just about as offensive as anything anybody can do. Jesus, the son of Mary. Why would they do that? John's gospel gives us a little window. Let's turn over there. I want to show you this one. I won't read all of these, but I think this stuff is interesting. John chapter 8 and verse 41. Listen to these parental type conversations. Jesus is saying to his opponents, you are behaving like your father who was the devil. We're going to see that in just a second. And they don't like it. They don't like it when Jesus says you're behaving like your father who is the devil. Go figure. They don't like that. Verse 41, you are doing the works that your father did. And they said to him, we were not born in sexual immorality. Remember, Jesus, the son of Mary. You want to start talking about your parents, Jesus? We weren't the ones born in sexual immorality. And you understand why it would have been so hard for Jesus to get any traction with some people. If you need to know something about me, if you want to know anything about me, you got to know my family. And if you want to know my family, you got to know my father. And Jesus was born in, from a worldly perspective, a questionable kind of situation where people didn't understand that. Can you understand why it would have been throughout the Gospels? Why people would have been so upset with Jesus, the Pharisees especially, when he calls him a brood of vipers? He says, "You are a family of snakes." Think about that for a second. In the world, in the context that we're talking about right now, in Matthew chapter 23, he says, "You are the children of murderers." If you want to know me, you got to know something about my father, and I'm attacking your fathers. This is big stuff. Incidentally, we don't have to turn over to 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 7, but this is one of the reasons why Paul says that if you are a man who's going to serve as a shepherd in a congregation, one of the qualities that you must have is that you must be well thought of by those in the community around. Because if your father has a bad reputation, what's everybody going to think of the family? You see some of these things once you start paying attention. So, number one, I told you there's three things. We're coming to it here. There's three things. Number one, if you want to know me, who are you, Ryan? I got to tell you about my family. Tell me about your family. I got to tell you about my father. And not only that, but the entire family's responsibility and duty is to imitate and walk in the steps of their father. Hopefully, he has lived righteously and respectfully so that when I walk in his steps, I will be carrying on the honor and respectability of this family. But my job, just like James and John were working in the boat with their dad as fishermen, and Jesus was working as a carpenter just like his dad was, our job and our responsibility is to imitate our father. Turn over to John chapter 14. This one has a little bit more reading, but I would ask that you be patient with me throughout some of these readings, because I hope that you never read these things the same way again. I hope that you think, oh yeah, that's right. John chapter 14, starting in verse 7, I'm going to read down to verse 11. Jesus says, "If you had known me, you would have known my Father also." You get it? If you want to know me, you got to know my dad. If you want to know my dad, you got to know me. It's family connection. "If you had known me, you would have known my father also. From now on, you do know him and have seen him." Philip said to him, "Lord, show us the Father, and it is enough." And Jesus said to him, "Have I been with you so long, and you still do not know me, Philip? Whoever has seen me has seen the Father. How can you say, 'Show us the Father'? Do you not believe that I am in the Father and the Father is in me? The words that I say to you, I do not speak on my own authority, but the Father who dwells in me does his works. Believe me that I am in the Father and the Father is in me, or else believe on account of the works themselves." This is not religious Bible language. "If you had known me, then you would have known the Father." And we're like, wow, that's deep. That's not. It's just the ancient world with family relationships. The thing that's deep and the thing that Jesus is trying to get across to these people is, that's not my dad. That's my dad. That's the thing that he's saying to these people. And when you see me, then you see my Father. And if you want to see the Father, then look at me. Everybody understands this within family relationships in the ancient world. There's only two more examples of this. So bear with me, please. Look at Galatians 3. You can see another one in Galatians chapter 3. This one has to do with Abraham. And the only reason why I'm taking the time to come over here and look at this is because sometimes Galatians 3 can get a little bit hairy. It's not hairy. You'll get it now. You will follow this, I think. Galatians chapter 3, starting in verse 6, let me ask you only this. Did you receive the Spirit by works of the law or by hearing with faith? How did you become a Christian and receive the Spirit of God? By doing the law of Moses or by hearing with faith? Look down at verse 6. He starts talking about Abraham and how Abraham believed God. Abraham heard with faith. The law of Moses wasn't even a thing. So he didn't come to be God's person because of doing the law. He heard by faith. He says, and it was counted to him as righteousness. Verse 7, know then that it is those of faith who are the sons of Abraham. And the scripture, foreseeing that God would justify the Gentiles by faith, preached the gospel beforehand to Abraham, saying, in you shall all the nations be blessed. So then, those who are of faith are blessed along with Abraham, the man of faith. If you want to say that Abraham is your father, then do what Abraham did. And how was Abraham right with God? By faith, not by works of the law. It's just this picture of imitating and acting like your father. One more. Turn over to 1 John chapter 2. We read a little bit of this last night. And I'll tell you what my inclination is, and I'm going to say it because maybe if I say it, then I won't do it so much. It's really annoying when I do this, I know. But I can't help myself. I'm reading along in all of these different verses as we go, and almost every single verse has one of these points, and what I'm inclined to do is to read the verse and go, did you see it? Just do that by yourself, and I'll try not to. But it's amazing. When you start thinking about this, you got to know my family, you got to know my father, and you got to know that my responsibility is to walk in the steps of my father, to imitate my father. Now read this text knowing that about family in the ancient world. Chapter 2, starting in verse 28, we're going to read down to chapter 3 and verse 10. And now, little children, abide in him, so that when he appears, we may have confidence and not shrink from him in shame at his coming. If you know that he is righteous, you may be sure that everyone who practices righteousness has been born of him. You know that God is righteous. How do I know that I've been born from God? Because I'm righteous. Because it is the child's responsibility to walk after the steps of the Father. I'm doing it, see? Chapter 3 and verse 1. See what kind of love the Father has given to us, that we should be called children of God, and so we are. The reason why the world does not know us is that it did not know him. Beloved, we are God's children now, and what we will be has not yet appeared, but we know that when he appears, we will be like him, because we will see him as he is. And everyone who thus hopes in him purifies himself as he is pure. Everyone who makes a practice of sinning also practices lawlessness. Sin is lawlessness. You know that he appeared to take away sins, and in him there is no sin. No one who abides in him keeps on sinning. No one who keeps on sinning has either seen him or known him. Little children, let no one deceive you. Whoever practices righteousness is righteous as he is righteous. Whoever makes a practice of sinning is of the devil, for the devil has been sinning from the beginning. The reason the Son of God appeared was to destroy the works of the devil. No one born of God makes a practice of sinning, for God's seed abides in him, and he cannot keep sinning because he has been born of God. by this it is evident who are the children of God and who are the children of the devil. Whoever does not practice righteousness is not of God, nor is the one who does not love his brother. If you want to know something about me, you have to know about my family. If you want to know about my family, you have to know about my father. And when you know about my father, you can understand who I am and why I do what I do, and the choices that I make, and the people that I associate with, and everything about my life. When we start thinking about this subject and what it means to be the family of God, who we're associated with, and who our father is, whenever we talk about these sorts of things, family, as we've been talking about it this week, family, as God's family, it's not something that we do. It's something that we are. In our very essence, it's what defines us and characterizes us as God's people, as God's family. You are my brother and my sister, and I am your brother in the Lord. It's how people can know us. And so what if I said to you from the very start, who are you? Tell me about yourself. What if our very first response matched up with the culture of the New Testament that the Bible was written inside of? Who are you, Ryan? Tell me about yourself. I am a son of the King. I am a part of God's family. And what if we lived in a world, or we worked towards making the world such, that when I said to people that I am the son of the Creator of all things and that I am a part of this great family, that somebody can look at me and know everything about me that they need to know, because they know my family, and more importantly, because they know my father. Look at Colossians chapter 3, two more verses. Does this make it any easier now to understand why you would see passages like this in the Bible? Colossians chapter 3 and verse 20. Children, obey your parents in everything, for this pleases the Lord. Do you understand the why now? Obey your parents in the Lord. Why? Because I said so. No. Not because I said so. Obey your parents in the Lord because your parents who are here right now, and it would be great if we could say parents in general, are modeling their lives and their way of life and their words and their deeds and everything about them. They are modeling their lives after God. And the reason why you, my children, obey me, why you obey your parents, is because they're modeling their lives after God, and they want you to model your lives after them so that you can be like God, ultimately. This is not about obey your parents so you don't get a spanking. This is about obey your parents so that you can represent the family of God's people, and ultimately so that you can represent your father. To obey him and to be like him, this is what pleases God. If you're here tonight and you're not a Christian, this point in the lesson, this is where we would say, don't you want to be a part of this family? Like, I don't know what your opinion of this family is. I've only been here for a couple of days, but this family is pretty awesome as far as I can tell. And I'm not just saying it as lip service. Like, I feel like I've made some friends for the rest of my life here. I really like this family. And this family is doing what the Acts 2 family is doing. They're acting like they're supposed to be acting. And so those different people are being added to the church day by day because they want to be a part of the family. Don't you want to be a part of the family? In a world where the family and the home structure is falling apart on every corner, don't you want to be a part of something that's real? And even more than that, don't be converted to the family of God, because I promise you this right now, I'm going to let you down. I don't know when it'll be. Hopefully it'll be a long time from now. But I promise at some point I'm going to let you down. But our Father will never. Don't you want to be able to say, I am a child of the King of all things? That's pretty awesome. If you believe that Jesus is the Son of God, you're willing to turn away from your sin. We talked about that tonight. Turn away from your sin, because that's not what the Father does. We don't act like our Father, like the devil. We turn away from our sin, and now we're going to start to walk like the King. We're going to start to walk like our Father. You're going to make confession. Confession is to say before this group of people, it's going to look different. There's no prescribed confession in the New Testament. I believe that Jesus is the Son of God. My preferred version of the confession is Jesus is King, and I'm going to serve Him. It would be just as perfectly acceptable biblically to say, God is now my Father. I'm going to be born into His family, and I'm going to behave as one of His children. Believe, repent, confess, die to yourself. Listen, this is not about getting wet. Die to yourself. Take that old dead man or woman. Do with that person what you do with all dead things and bury them. And when you are born again, raised up out of the grave, now you are born anew into the family of God. If you want to do that tonight, this would be an appropriate time for that, or any time. Just make your needs known. Thank you very much for your time tonight.